Powerful people can abuse their position, and the community expects them to be held accountable. That's where the KPBS Investigations team comes in. If you have a tip for us, send an email to investigations@kpbs.org or message on the Signal app at 619-594-8177.
I had to get up at 2:30 a.m. By the time I left the house, it was 3:30 a.m. Then my younger brother and I would get in the car and I would drive us to the border.
This is Mitzi Salgado. She used to cross the border from Tijuana, Mexico to San Diego, California for school.
Starting in her early years in elementary school and continuing all the way through college.
We would get in line at about 4 a.m. and we would just find the end of the line. There's always this anticipation. Like you're driving, you see all the lights in your face in pitch black darkness.
For Mitzi, getting a comparable education in Mexico would have been too expensive, and living in the U.S. wasn't an option.
So, given the proximity to the United States, American students living south of the border, like her, find ways to make it to school in the U.S.
You're just driving, waiting to find the end of the line. And the more you drive, the pit in your stomach just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, as you realize how much longer you'll be sitting there.
The wait would be around 2 to 3 hours on a good day, up to 4 or 5 on a bad day.
And then there were days she had to walk across.
It's more exhausting. You're standing. It's cold. Sometimes it's raining.
Yet, the weather was the least of her worries.
It's, I think, more hostile. You're more vulnerable as a woman.
Mitzi's body language began to shift as she shared this.
So, like, I remember one time I was crossing the border and the CBP asked me to lift my shirt because I could have a weapon. Obviously, I was 16 years old. What weapon would I carry? And he asked me to turn around. So I had to give him a 360 turn. And I was so angry and so embarrassed. And he had made me do that at the port of entry pedestrian where everyone else is watching you. You know, you're all kind of standing in a group, awkwardly nervous, waiting for this crossing to happen. Finally, I just said, I'm tired. It's early. I don't want to have to argue. I'm already running late for school. I've been up for 5 hours. I've been in this long line. I'm just going to oblige. I felt dirty. I felt harassed. I felt embarrassed and ashamed. You know, I felt all those things. I was 16. In the name of national security, you're kind of in their hands.
Tens of thousands of students make this journey to school every day across the U.S.-Mexico border. They're referred to as transborder or transfronterizo students. They live in border cities like Tijuana for a range of reasons, including being a part of mixed-status families, like having a parent who's a Mexican national without authorization to enter the U.S., or because the high cost of living in the United States has pushed them to live south of the border.
So that's just a typical day. So for some, then you have to deal with the public transportation, you know, and then getting to school, and then if your community college says that you're not a resident.
You gotta pay them.
Yeah, exactly. So
insult to injury.
The irony that this grueling commute is only the beginning of the complications is not lost on Mitzi.
You have to fight for yourself there, too.
A U.S. citizen living in Tijuana is not recognized as a California resident and does not automatically qualify for in-state tuition.
At community colleges, that can mean paying up to $4,500 per semester, compared to about $600 for residents.
At four-year universities, the costs can climb to nearly $13,000 per semester. This financial strain affects students who live south of the border but can't afford to live in the U.S.
These circumstances often force students into difficult workarounds, like using a California address where they don't actually live, or delaying college for a year or two to establish residency.
But then, in September 2023, a sign of hope.
Students who live south of the border will soon be able to go to college in the U.S. and spend less money while attending.
Governor Newsom recently signed Assembly Bill 91, which offers in-state tuition prices for low-income students in parts of Mexico, including Tijuana.
The news of Assembly Bill 91 being signed into law was widely welcomed in the transborder community, raising hopes for students seeking a more affordable path to college.
Now, in its second year, the program has helped over 400 students attend school north of the border, across the 9 participating community colleges.
But as the program rolled out, many transborder students continue to fall through the cracks.
If this is your first time tuning in, we are featuring stories of visionaries and shapers of the borderlands. Today's story is about how Assembly Bill 91 passed and what's keeping it from serving more trans-border students.
From KPBS, this is Port of Entry,
where we tell cross-border stories that connect us.
I'm Alan Lilienthal.
And I'm Natalie Gonzalez.
On The Finest, Ahmed Jude first began dancing as a stateless refugee in Syria at the onset of civil war. To get from there to dancing with San Diego's Golden State Ballet took an unwavering commitment to an art form he was truly willing to die for.
I had a feeling that I risked my life to protect, and I still have this feeling till today when I'm dancing.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Port of Entry.
En las Americas. If I can only find the spot.
Our producer Julio made his way to Las Americas Outlet Mall in San Isidro, just steps from the border.
Weaving through the mall's corridors, next to the bathrooms and the mall's maintenance room, Julio spots a sign over a glass door. The capital letters read TFI, for the Transfronterizo Institute. Inside a small, cramped two-room office, a few students sit with books open, surrounded by college prep materials, talking with each other. They were startled as Julio made his way in.
Hola.
¿Está Mitzi?
This is Mitzi Salgado's headquarters, where she helps other trans-border students. She was trailing behind Julio.
How are you?
Bien, bien. Déjate saludo bien nomás. Déjame que voy a poner.
Oye, I am rolling. Okay.
She gave him a brief tour of the space.
Okay, so this is a common student area, and then the classroom is here, so we hold classes here once a month.
In 2021, she founded the Transfronterizo Institute, an organization dedicated to helping high school graduates from Tijuana apply to universities in the U.S. Despite the flushing from the restrooms and the constant beeping from the maintenance room next door, Mitzi is happy that this space exists.
I'm so excited. This is a big deal because, first of all, the Transporter Institute or Transporter students never really had almost like I feel like we've always been in isolation and never really had like a visible space that represented us. Also, it's at the border. The port of entry is facing my office. Yeah. I can physically see people coming through the border into the parking lot of the mall. It's an accessible location for families and cross-border folks. And it's also a place for the students that work at the mall. So this mall is usually the first place where students actually get their job. It's their first, you know, introduction to the United States labor force. And so a lot of my students currently work at Plaza Las Americas.
The role of the Institute also goes beyond academic support.
We also advocate for policies and state laws that ensure that students who are trans-border are able to, you know, their rights are maintained legally and that there are enough legislative policies that can protect them.
In 2023, when AB 91 was being debated, Mitzi got involved.
By then, her learning center was fully operational and had already worked with multiple cohorts of students.
As AB 91 moved forward, she saw an opportunity to bring their voices into the effort.
And so one of the key things that we did was we organized the families to send letters of support to Governor Gavin Newsom and calling his office to get him to sign the bill.
She also helped produce a social media video to raise awareness about the bill with a direct call to action.
Hi, my name is Sofia Mendez Hernandez. I'm from Tijuana, Mexico.
When I was little, I didn't realize like the situation we were in.
In the video, trans-border students shared their experiences and encouraged viewers to contact and pressure Governor Newsom to sign the bill.
If they were to move to the U.S. tomorrow, it would be very difficult because the education that they have at U.S. is not that cheap.
And then they took my mom's visa away. That day was very sad because now my mom doesn't have a visa.
Mitzi wasted no time building momentum and rallying support for the bill.
So I organized the families and ensured that we sent out letters of support and made sure that we called beyond the video that the Cultura Media created.
Cultura Media is a nonprofit media and research arm of her learning hub.
And so I was in constant contact with his David Alvarez's office and offering students testimonials and also traveling to Sacramento to basically discuss this.
Passing the bill required a monumental effort from many sectors, and Assemblymember David Alvarez, the main sponsor of the bill, ensured it was presented on the legislative floor.
So my name is David Alvarez. I represent this community that we're in. This is actually the community that I grew up in.
We caught up with the Assemblymember in his home neighborhood of Barrio Logan.
When my parents first came to this country in 1976, they lived in that corner building apartment right there. And so I've been here my whole life. I represent the 80th Assembly District in the legislature. There's 80 Assembly members. And I'm the 80th because I'm the one at the bottom of the state, the border with Mexico.
His ties to the border begin with his family's journey to the United States, a narrative that mirrors the very fabric of America.
So I was born here. I was the youngest of six. My siblings and my parents were not documented, so we could not cross the border as a family. It wasn't until 1986, after the Federal Immigration Reform Act that granted amnesty and allowed people to become documented, that my parents got their documents, that I started to become more of a border crosser.
That would be the start of Alvarez's transborder journey, although from San Diego to Tijuana.
This community did not have a grocery store, and so we actually went to the Mercado to buy our groceries when I was a kid. My parents never had health care, and so when we got sick, we went to the farmacias, usually to Tijuana, to get our medical care.
Dispelling myths about the border was essential to passing AB 91.
People envision, like, people running across the border, which we all know does not happen here. There's like triple fence, right? And then we have, again, 170,000 people waiting for hours to do this. No one's rushing through. And so, but that is still the narrative. That's still what gets the news coverage. It's the scandalous, the drug bust that happened once in a while, but then it's like, oh, that must happen every day.
And if it's challenging to make San Diegans aware of this reality,
that's even harder to do when I'm in Sacramento, which is as far as you can get from the border, and I have 119 other legislators, senators, and assembly members who need to understand why this matters. And if it just sounds like you're giving free college to people from Mexico, they'd freak out and they're like, what are you talking about? This is a horrible idea. We have so many kids that need college access in California.
To anyone who needs convincing, Alvarez just points to our neighboring states.
Texas, who is as anti-immigrant as you get, has their program where they have been doing this for, I think, well over 20 years. The University of Texas system, which is their state university system, allows Mexican students to attend their university system to the tune of almost 2,000 students every single year. As Texans, not as foreign students, because Texas has realized many years ago that their border region is really important to their economy.
And it isn't just Texas. Arizona and New Mexico have similar programs.
We are the only border state that does not recognize that our border students are an asset to our region. And so this bill tries to accomplish that.
Joel Pilco agrees. He is the director of the binational office at Southwestern College, the community college closest to the border, and a pioneer in implementing AB 91.
He worked closely with Assemblymember David Alvarez and was instrumental in providing data and insights for the bill.
And if we don't provide an opportunity to them, then they're not going to study. And then how are we going to respond to the workforce needs of the region that are created now, but they're really going to be critical in 2030 if we don't do this work?
Creating the bill required acknowledging that gap and reclassifying transborder students as in-state residents. To achieve that, a task force was put together of policy analysts, educators, and legislators from both sides of the border. Alvarez and Joel joined others to discuss key points of impact and what the program would look like.
All of the community colleges were in support. Like, they all not only supportive, they're embracing it. They want to serve more students.
Joel Southwestern College, being the closest college to the border, experienced the greatest demand for this program. Alvarez, Joel, and other administrators also collaborated with institutions in Baja California to support trans-border students seeking to begin their education in the U.S.
So then we present the bill in January of 2022, and then in March we start going through the committee process, we start going through higher education committee, we start to...
The bill was approved by committees and moved to the Senate floor for a vote, where it passed with overwhelming support. But...
And then what happens is the governor has a 30-day period to either sign bills or veto the bills.
The bill reached Governor Newsom's desk. Alvarez, Joel, and the others involved waited for news of the signing. The first week passes with no movement. And the second. And the third week. The bill sat on the governor's desk for the full 30 days. But Alvarez wasn't pessimistic.
He remembers the showdown he had with the governor and the ace up his sleeve.
One of the things I told the governor, I said, hey, Greg Abbott is doing this in Texas. He's outdoing you. So I think you should really get on and support this idea. So, you know, challenge him a little bit because he always wants to challenge other states, right? He wants to do what other states are doing better than them.
Alvarez believed that Governor Newsom's drive to outcompete other states would motivate him to sign the bill.
And 30 minutes before the bill expired,
Governor's office calls me and says, we want to let you know that the governor has signed Assembly Bill 91. And we just want to thank you because you and your office has been really great about informing us and educating on this. And without that effort, governor would not have signed the bill.
Aside from the ace in his sleeve, Alvarez believes one factor made the biggest difference of all.
At every one of our committees, we had students come up and say, I'm a student, like, this is what, my experience is like, and that, the voices of the students were really powerful.
Joel's college coordinated student testimonies and worked closely with Alvarez's office to ensure they made an impact.
And so did Mitzi.
We were ready to fire and do whatever he needed to get done.
Mitzi traveled to Sacramento to meet with legislators, lobby for the bill, and present her students' letters.
But for me, that was a really important piece, is engaging the binational transfronterizo community to civically engage through that type of advocacy, which is really getting their voices out and sending not just a standard letter, right? It was a personalized anecdotes of students' experiences crossing the border and how they would benefit from such bill.
In the end, it all added up and the bill was signed into law.
KPBS On Demand is supported by the City of Chula Vista and the Port of San Diego hosting South Bay Earth Day at Bayfront Park on Saturday, April 18th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. with tips on how to reduce your impact on the environment and hands-on green activities, food, and music. Additional information at southbayearthday.com.
You are listening to Port of Entry. The bill kicked off a five-year pilot project running from January 1st, 2024 to January 1st, 2029. It was then up to the community colleges to lead the rollout and implement the bill.
So the community colleges came together, which was a requirement by the law, to have a uniform application system and documentation system. We started visiting high schools in Tijuana, having meetings with students and parents in Spanish.
As with any new program, they faced challenges.
So the implementation of AB 91 was slow. The way that the bill was created and passed gave the community colleges a lot of administrative decision-making on how the law would be implemented.
While the bill included a list of prerequisites to determine eligibility, it did not provide criteria for how to weigh them against one another. This was left to the colleges.
According to Mitzi, this meant students could be accepted at one school but rejected at another.
Additionally, the pilot program has an extremely limited enrollment cap compared to the size of the demand.
So the number of students that are able to enroll in a five-year period is an average of up to 200 students, if they're not full-time students. If they are full-time students, then the spaces available to them through the AB 91 bill is less than that.
Each school has a 150 full-time equivalent student, or FTES, limit per year for the duration of the pilot program. Once the program is full, space is open only when a student leaves.
But that wasn't the biggest flaw in the rollout.
The most egregious issue, according to Mitzi, is that some students who declare they live in Tijuana or have recently moved from Tijuana are not informed they may qualify for the program.
So some students would get funneled, others were not. Others were told, well, you have to pay out of state.
Some did meet the AB 91 requirements, Mitzi argues, but were turned away after declaring they lived in Tijuana.
Getting a lot of students who were telling me that they knew about AB 91 through a third party or through, you know, an article or something, and they had gone to the school and that they were told that they didn't qualify or that there was no such thing, right? Or they simply weren't informed properly.
Which was the case with many of her students. One of them was unable to continue because he couldn't afford out-of-state tuition.
En ese entonces dije que vivía en Estados Unidos. A veces me quedaba, a veces venía, pero pues para mejor accesibilidad, pues viví en Estados Unidos.
Like many transborder students, Alexander Ortiz splits his time between Tijuana and San Diego.
Entonces, ¿ellos creyeron que vivías en Tijuana?
Cuando me negaron la... Ahora sí que la residencia, sí.
In June 2025, right after graduating from a San Diego-based high school, Alexander went to enroll in one of the 9 participating AB 91 community colleges.
¿Ellos te dijeron, tú vives en Tijuana?
Sí, en el sistema parecía como que estaba en Tijuana, o que era extranjero, no de Estados Unidos.
The admissions officer determined he didn't qualify for residency status and classified him as living in Tijuana. He was registered as an out-of-state international student.
Me dieron la opción de pagar como si no fuera residente, y eso fue lo que me detuvo a inscribirme en ese entonces.
¿Tú ya sabías sobre el programa AB99?
No, no tenía conciencia en ese entonces todavía.
¿Y nadie de la escuela a la que fuiste te informó?
No. No, era un tema desconocido para mí en ese entonces.
Alexander didn't know about AB 91 or that he might qualify. He wasn't informed about the program by the admissions office.
Si tú hubieras sabido de ese programa, ¿tú hubieras entrado, hubieras aplicado?
Sí, tal vez para tener mejor oportunidad y tener accesibilidad a entrar.
Had he known of the program's existence, he would have looked for a way to join.
Given the tuition difference, Alexander had to put off a full year of school to establish residency. To Mitzi, this is baffling, and the consequences are unacceptable.
He came from a U.S.-based school, so that automatically should, by definition, give him California residency, even though he lived in Tijuana. And yet, they didn't even offer him the option of enrolling as a resident through AB 91. So they immediately classified him as an international student, and he couldn't afford to go to college as an international student.
The unintended consequence, waiting to establish residency, can derail students from their academic goals.
He had to sacrifice a whole year of pretty much of going to college, so he's falling behind by one whole year.
The problem still persists. Mitzi says she's left in the dark, not understanding why some of her students don't qualify.
I mean, I still get students coming in today that say, hey, I come from Tijuana. I enrolled at community college, and they labeled me as a non-resident. And I asked them, did they inform you about AB 91? And most of the students say no, they did not.
Believing her students meet the qualifications, Mitzi has taken matters into her own hands.
And so I personally have gone with the students and you know, to the administration offices and inquired about, you know, their status and just as a kind of like as a chaperone almost, or just like as accompany them. And I'm standing next to the student, and the person is not informing them.
Her persistence has put her at odds with institutions, to the point that some schools have barred her from entering admissions offices with students.
But since last year, you know, one student requested that I accompany them, and I did. And the coordinator at this community college said, no, only you come by yourself. You cannot have anyone else. Or this person can't go with you. And they didn't want me to go in with them.
Mitzi has built a reputation as a watchdog on these issues, and in some cases, that reputation precedes her.
There was another instance where the student requested that I go into the office, when they were already in the office. So they were talking to the coordinator privately inside. And this person said, oh, are you talking about Mitzi? And this person said, yeah, why? You know her? No, she can't come in.
For now, there isn't much she can do, but document what she and her students have experienced.
And so I sent this memorandum to the chancellor, is outlining some of the issues that we were facing at the community colleges of his district.
The 5-page memo cited instances in which her students were denied residency or AB 91 status, with details on the nature of the occurrences, including times, dates, and signatures.
It feels very targeted. It's unfortunate because I'm obviously doing this work because I believe in education. I believe in education equity, and I believe to access to education. I'm doing this work for the same reasons that oftentimes many administrators got themselves into their own jobs in the first place.
Back when the bill was passed, there was no blueprint for how to implement it, something Joel acknowledges.
So yes, Southwestern College was the first community college to implement AB 91. The processes that we created have become a blueprint for the other community colleges that are recruiting students for this program.
We mentioned Alexander's case to Joel, even though it happened at a different institution.
Well, I can tell you that the community colleges were so different that we don't have besides agreeing on what the requirement should be, we didn't really cooperate on recruiting students together. There were some events that we did together, but I think that each community college might be doing something different. And when it comes to that being different, the way the information is provided to the student, the way the process is being handled after the student applies could be different.
As Joel says, there are differences between colleges, and an implementation curve exists, as they were largely left to figure it out.
Mitzi acknowledges that, but also points out areas for improvement.
First of all, I would implement AB 91 community college-wide. And it would embed itself into the admissions process, even in the application, right?
Integrating AB 91 into the existing application process, similar to other programs, would streamline the experience for students, allowing them to complete a single process and transition more easily between institutions.
Ultimately, simplifying the process for students.
AB 91 could potentially introduce is standardizing the type of documents that are needed and minimizing the number of documents that are required from students, especially if these students are already U.S. citizens.
Another area for improvement Mitzi identified is extending AB 91 beyond the community college level. Currently, the AB 91 status does not transfer when a student moves to a different institution.
There isn't a clear path from AB 91 to residency, so students are left using the same old workarounds as those without AB 91.
Right, so like AB 91 is like the gateway policy now for many students to be able to go to school and then figure out their, you know, housing situation here. And that's eventually they were able to become residents. But it's a whole process.
Lastly, there is an issue with the length of the pilot program.
This bill should be at least, if it's going to be a pilot, from a policy standpoint, it needs to be at least 10 years. Because the sample size, the number of people that participate in such program needs to be large enough to be able to carry enough significant statistical weight to basically justify a continuation of such bill.
Joel is not too worried about the sample size. The demand is there, and his school is at full capacity, currently serving 186 AB 91 students.
A mix of both full-time and part-time students.
He believes the demand for the program is sufficient to justify an extension because his findings are compelling.
Average GPA for these 186 students, it's above 3.0. It's over 94% persistence rate. Compared to the general student population, which is lower by more than 10 points. Course success rate, AB 91 students, in the year that we have data, they score much higher than the general student population by more than 10 percentage points.
These early results give Joel confidence that the program might continue and expand beyond community colleges into four-year universities.
San Diego State and UCSD are now considering joining AB 91. I was in a meeting with them a couple of weeks ago where we presented all these findings, and I believe there's interest.
Mitzi sees the push for AB 91 and similar policies as potential legal precursors to questioning how the U.S. and California determine who has a right to an education.
I'm pretty sure we've had plenty of cases, including my own family members, that could have done that and could have proven or, you know, called the bluff of the Constitution to really enforce the idea that education is a right, because there is no clear exclusion or distinction in the California Constitution that mentions residency and defines residency as you having to live here. It just says anybody in the state of California has the right to an education, but it doesn't say you have to live in California. It has never been challenged, right? There's no case out there.
Regardless of the program's shortcomings, Mitzi says she's glad it exists.
In my lifetime, I didn't think I was gonna see this bill. I honestly didn't. If just introducing a bill as a pilot was all he could do, I'm happy for that, because this is our step in the door. Because from here, we can have more dialogues, more conversations around how much we need something like this in our region, and how special it is to have a state bill that crosses borders. It bridges our neighbors, right? It bridges the community across the border that has always existed in the United States in San Diego. It validates the existence of our people, our trans border community, people that cross the border every day, the hundreds and thousands of people that are in line since 2:33 in the morning. It validates the existence and the experiences of those folks that work with us, go to school with us. So it's important. It's very important to have this bill.
This episode of Port of Entry was written and produced by Julio Cesar Ortiz Franco.
Adrian Villalobos is technical producer and sound designer.
This episode was edited by Chrissy Nguyen with support from Elizabeth Haynes.
Lisa Jane Morissette is director of audio programming and operations.
I'm Alan Lilienthal.
And I'm Natalie Gonzalez.
Nos vemos pronto.
On The Finest Podcast, we cover the people, art, and movements redefining culture in San Diego, from Blink-182 to scrappy local bands. We also have cults, a lost composer, a world record traveler, and champion birders. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.